Now, Lucy Lockett lost her pocket. Kitty Fisher found it. Yeah, that's a nursery rhyme. We are going to be talking, however, pockets and their place in our sort of collective imaginings and the place in our clothes. And when I say our, I probably don't mean something as sort of gender-laden as my voice. I'm talking about pockets for women. Pockets as an item of female agency, of resistance, of possession. They're an interesting part in fashion, and the clothes that we wear, they tend to be an external show. They're made for public view. It's an outward presentation. The pocket, well, the pocket is not. Ariane Fenneteau is co-author of The Pocket, A Hidden History of Women's Lives, 1660 to 1900. It's an object-driven history, and it sheds tremendous light on the social, the cultural, the economic lives of women through, yes, the story of The Pocket. She joins us now via Skype from New Zealand. Ariane, welcome.
Hello.
The pocket that you're writing about, it's not like the one that I've got my hand in right now, if I want to.
This is a specific pocket. No, it's not. So it's a little known fact, but I suppose the Lucy Lockett rhyme that you mentioned is probably the only kind of memory we have of that long forgotten pocket, which women nonetheless had for 200 years. And this was kind of the only pocket they knew. And basically what these pockets looked like, they were detached from the main items of clothing. So they weren't integrated in the skirts or the dresses. They were a separate item of clothing that looked a little bit like a pouch or a bag, if you wish, that's attached to a string or a tape. And it comes as singles or as pairs. So you'd have maybe two on a tie or on a tape, and you'd tie them around your waist under your clothing, and you would access them through openings in the side of the clothing.
That fact that the pocket, and this is where this becomes an interesting conversation around gendered norms in fashion, the fact that the pocket is a separate item to the clothing, is there an element of resistance and subversion in that?
Well, it's interesting because when you start off thinking about those pockets, you think, oh, well, you know, because we think a little bit in contemporary terms, and you think, oh, why aren't women allowed, or why do they not have like integrated pockets like men had at the time? Because from the 16th century, men did have the kind of modern day pockets, the pockets that you could have your hand in if you wanted to, whereas women didn't. And maybe you're right that it's in itself a sort of act of resistance, that, oh, we're going to add our own pockets kind of thing. And they were quite personal or personable objects. You know, they were companionate. You would wear your pockets. You could change your dress but keep the same pockets. Mm. And, you know, some, because we worked with actual objects from museum, and some of them are just, you know, worn to within an inch of their lives. They've been patched. So they're things that people kept to their sides for long periods of time. So they were a bit of this personal outside of patriarchy space a little bit.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? And they become, they must be here, a very interior space, a place, yes, held close, held away from public view, a place of your most private possessions.
Mm. And to contextualize this, you need to remember that at the time, women did not have access to legal property, like possession. They weren't considered as legal entities unless they were widowed or unmarried, which was kind of bad. So, socially speaking, you didn't want to be a spinster. But you, at that point, you did have some kind of legal autonomy. But otherwise, any married woman, all her possessions were really legally her husband's possessions. And it's interesting because we looked at court studies or court records, sorry. And in the court records, I guess it's the women whose pockets have been rifled, pickpocketed, or taken away and they come to court and they claim something that they feel is theirs, although legally in the eyes of the very court to which they come and testify, it is legally the husband's property. So you have this kind of access to something like possession at a time and feeling of possessing things, belonging, that are yours, personally yours, although in the eyes of the court, they are really the property of the husband.
Well, this is leading us to the great question throughout our conversation is, what's in those pockets?
Uh-huh. Well, loads of different things, actually. So we, because we looked at a lot of court cases, we, you know, kind of made lists of what people claim they had in their pockets. So there's obviously money in different forms. So you have kind of coins. You have a little bit of paper money, but not that much. You also have items of clothing. You have jewelry. And then you also have the kind of underbelly of possession, which is what women thieves put in their pockets. And you, obviously that's money, that's a lot of fabric, and sometimes sort of surprising things. Women could fit a lot in their pocket if they wanted to. So, for instance, one of the stories that usually get people laughing is a woman who tried to make away with two live ducks in her pockets.
I laughed. It's a very commodious pocket for the woman.
So, yeah, which gives you an impression of just how big they were, because, you know, they weren't ducklings, they were actual ducks.
The pocket comes into to popularity too at the same time as the novel, which is another potential inclusion.
Obviously, novels in the 18th century, they were seen as a female genre, you know, something for women that excited young women's imagination, maybe a bit too much. And they also came in a smaller format, that women's books were kind of published in a smaller format. It was seen as more feminine. And of course, it goes together with portability, with being able to take your book and go and read outside in the garden or on a walk. Obviously, also potentially hiding what you're reading.
Hmm. Pocket-sized, you might say.
Yeah. Actually, in French, it's interesting because a small book, like a paperback, we call this a livre de poche. We call this a pocket book.
And then all of a sudden the pocket disappears. What happened then?
Well, it doesn't completely disappear suddenly. And that's an interesting thing as well, is if you think of the life of an object as a, you know, historically its life, like the when it exists and when it stops to exist. There was no sudden death knell for the pocket. For most of the 19th century, it was called repeatedly unfashionable in fashion magazines. And more other sort of carrying potentials were being pushed onto women, like the bag, you know, the handheld bag. But despite the onslaught, and that it's really an onslaught of, you know, our pockets are just the, you know, something for older women, you know, like a young woman wants a reticule, which was on one of those new fangled handbags. Despite all this, the pockets persist. You know, women, like, don't listen to what the fashion magazines tell them they should dress as, and they carry on wearing their pockets. But gradually, there's more and more alternatives, and maybe initially they kind of overlap with a pocket. And gradually, maybe towards, like, 1850, as women's dress starts integrated more male-style pockets, and the kind of it's less practical to have those tie-on pockets, they are gradually phased out or they gradually disappear. But it's a long death. It's a long death because you have initially fashion historians had just thought that they disappeared around the time of Jane Austen, like 1800, when you have the woman wearing the muslin dresses with the really high waists. But we have pockets that, you know, date to the very end of the 19th century. Jack the Ripper's victims, several of them had tie-on pockets. As you can see from the police reports of the description of the poor women's bodies. And we even have, in the 20th century, when travel developed, train travel, but also overseas travel, we have a sort of evolved pocket that starts appearing, which is often called a travelling pocket.
It's a wonderful thing, Ariane, how an object like that can tell us so much about other facets and aspects of life, how a world comes into view when viewed through that small prism of something like the pocket. It's a fascinating way to look at life and history.
Well, that's what we think. Well, I guess it's a very interesting sort of small prism through which to look at women's daily lives. And you're not looking, of course, you do come across some famous people, you know, some authors or some privileged women who were privileged enough to keep a diary or write letters. But you also come across the lives of very humble women who left no records whatsoever. And because the pocket is both an object and a container, it's something that is lends itself to different practices, you know, safety practices, you know, how do you keep your money safe? Privacy, it's also linked to mobility, you know, needing to go or move with things with you. It actually opens up a whole world of different questions.
Yes, a small antidote to feminine invisibility, Ariane. Thank you so much. And
thank you.
Congratulations on the work. And yes, a good place to keep one's ducks, if that should be your need. Ariane Fertitto, she's the co-author of The Pocket, A Hidden History of Women's Lives, 1660 to 1900. Not a penny was there in it, only ribbon rounded. Blueprint on RN.